Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Short. Joining me, as always, is Jake Barnes. We are here for your WWE SmackDown audio review for the SmackDown that aired May the 3rd, 2013. We are recording this on Star Wars Day. Happy May the 4th be with you to you as well. And Jake and I get together every week, not just on holidays, but every week, and we do this review for you guys. It's one of just many audios that are created each week on the site. We usually record over 6 hours of audio on the site each and every week in various formats. Jason Powell with the WWE Raw review, Will Pruitt with a TNA Impact Wrestling review. Will and Jake get together every week for the .NET Countdown, looking at the best and the worst in professional wrestling. Jason does a Q&A audio where members can ask both wrestling and non-wrestling questions. And every Thursday, Jason Powell and I get together for our flagship show. We call it .NET Weekly. We look at all the news of the week, often great news that's not made its way to the site yet. This week, we spent a lot of time talking about the Border Wars pay-per-view that's coming up this Saturday night. I will have coverage of that show, probably do an audio review of it as well. But the vast majority of that audio, including this Saturday's review of Ring of Honor's Border Wars, is exclusive to our members. So if you would like to listen to that audio every week and get access to the ad-free version of the site, the .NET member forum, and the .NET member blog section, all you have to do is become a .NET member. Head on over to ProWrestling.net, click on the .NET member sign-up link. We will get you started for just $7.50. That'll get you a 30-day trial. If you know you want to lock in for a longer time period, we'll be happy to give you a lower rate. We've got both six-month and one-year options for you. So head on over right now, become a .NET member, and not only do you get access to the new audio we record each week, but all the old audio that we've done is there. There's plenty of things in our archives, interviews with guys like Brock Lesnar, Chris Jericho, former WWE creative members Court Bauer, former WWE creative member Seth Mates. Let's see, who else has been on there recently? Just a number of guys, PJ Polacco, a.k.a. Just Incredible. It was on there recently. Just a ton of interview stuff for you guys there. A lot of stuff over WrestleMania as well. Seth Mates joined Jason Powell and I for a review of that show. So a lot of stuff there for you. It's a great time to be a .NET member. Head on over and sign up right now and get access to all of those things. And probably the best thing, of course, the ad-free version of the site. And once you sign up, make sure you go through the separate sign-up process for the .NET member forum, and you can discuss everything that we do each week here and talk wrestling with all the other members. It's a great forum, folks. Go ahead and get signed up right now. Jake, last week when we got together to talk about this, we were kind of excited about the SmackDown show. It was pretty good. There was a lot of good wrestling on it. Things made sense. They plugged in and flowed well together. There were some minor complaints about the show, but overall it was really good. This week, I feel like we went exactly the opposite way. There was some wrestling on the show, but some of it, you know, wasn't very good. Some of it didn't make sense. I think even the opening match is probably the one thing that was the most egregious to me. We got more silly Kali talking, and we're going to take the show apart from start to finish, but wow, what a difference a week makes. Last week, really, really good show. This week, really not so much.
Yeah, it was kind of disappointing that they weren't able to follow up last week's effort with you know, it was an equally good one, because I didn't think Monday Night Raw was particularly good either, and they didn't follow it up with anything particularly exciting on SmackDown either. So it was kind of an off week for WWE TV. I mean, obviously you hope they can get back to, you know, doing something compelling next week. But you know, I mean, all the typical complaints from SmackDown are here. You know, too many video packages. You know, too little interesting developments out in the ring. I mean, they managed to move some stories forward, but it just doesn't feel like they're in a mode where they're quickly advancing towards extreme rules. You know, they got quite a bit of time in between these pay-per-views, more than usual. So that seems like they're just kind of in a lull period before they really start pushing for that final run.
Yeah, and I guess the two major storylines, the Ryback storyline and the Shield storyline, are the two that they really dealt with. I mean, there was the World Heavyweight Championship, I guess those three things. Let's talk about the Shield and Kane. We got the main event of Dean Ambrose versus Kane, and we got what I thought we would get. We got the Shield attack. They beat him down. Kane was able to hold him off a little bit or whatnot, And it's obvious now after the way they posed at the end of that match with the tag titles that that's where it's going. I mean, I think we all knew that's where this was going, was the Shield was going to end up winning the tag titles, but they finally have brought those titles into it and made it a big deal, or starting to make it a big deal about the titles themselves. Were you satisfied with that? I mean, we had the great Shield-Undertaker altercation from last week, and this week they basically repeated that with Kane, except in a lot of ways Kane got in a little more offense. He was able to hold the guys off. What did you think about the Shield and Kane as opposed to the Shield and Undertaker?
Yeah, I mean, I maybe it's just because we see Kane so often, that it just didn't feel quite as impactful to me, or that we've seen, you know, Kane and Daniel Bryan take on the Shield in various matches before, you know, the six-mans and whatnot. But, yeah, it just didn't seem to carry the weight that the Undertaker beatdown did. I guess I don't necessarily dislike the story, because I think they are doing the right thing by putting the Shield in position to win the tag titles, because I think they'd be a much more interesting team in that regard, with those titles than Kane and Bryan are at this point. I think they've told just about all the stories they can there. So, I mean, I don't necessarily think that even the direction of the story is bad. It just didn't. They kind of set themselves up for diminished returns by having the Undertaker beatdown take place, because really nothing after that is going to carry the same impact with viewers, just because it's the Undertaker's just legendary status and how few times we get to see him during the year.
Yeah, I was kind of the same way over the story at the end. I thought it was good. I thought it was well done. But at the same time, I was just a little bit unimpressed, uninspired by it, if you will. And I think part of the problem is, and I want to get your idea on this too, I think part of the problem was they set this up, they beat up Undertaker last week, and then we have the moment in the middle of the show where they attack Daniel Bryan. We don't know it at the very beginning. We hear somebody getting beat up, the camera gets picked up, they do their Shield promo, when they put the camera back down, there's Daniel Bryan laying on the ground. We see him later being helped out to training, and Kane comments on it and whatnot. But I think a lot of the impact of that should have put a lot of good heat on the main event, was lost because we saw Daniel Bryan in the opening segment lose to Ryback in a match, and I think that hurt what they ended up doing later, because we had already seen him and he had already taken the defeat from Ryback and whatnot. He already seemed like he was done, and so the beatdown on Bryan lost whatever impact it should have had. At least that's the way I look at it. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it just kind of felt like adding insult to injury, really. I mean, I thought we could talk about this more, but I thought Bryan gave Ryback a pretty good match, and I enjoyed that part of it. But after he'd already, taken a clean loss, yeah, it definitely, loses some steam when it just feels like they're finishing the job backstage that had already been started earlier in the show. So there was definitely some issues with the timing there, but I guess in the long run, it probably won't matter much.
We're going to go through the whole show, but we used to kind of pick out these high spots at the very beginning and talk about them. And just, we've transitioned a little bit with Daniel Bryan and Ryback. Obviously you liked the match, and I did as well. Do you think Daniel Bryan was the right opponent for Ryback here?
You know, they probably could have fit just about anybody there. I guess maybe they just, maybe the justification was, well, we want to give Ryback a good match. And I'm Bryan is probably as good a candidate as anybody to do that. And I thought he delivered. I mean, it was my favorite Ryback match that I've seen thus far. I can't think of another one, a singles match anyway, where they were able to get as much out of Ryback as Bryan did. So I understand the justification. If you really want to send the message that Ryback is capable of delivering an excellent match if he's in there with the right opponent. But I don't know if he really gained anything by beating Bryan. I mean, Bryan's been losing just about everything he's been involved with the Shield for a while now. So I don't know if he really picked up any steam, but I can understand wanting to give him a good match. So I guess I'm kind of conflicted on it. I'm not sure what to think yet. Maybe we'll see how it plays out in the coming weeks.
Yeah, God, it's a lot. Like, I guess my problem here with this was that, what you pointed out, that I don't know that he gained anything by beating Bryan, because Bryan is the guy who's been absorbing the losses with the Shield. They managed to protect just about everybody else beat us in the pit on Monday, but that was for purpose there to tell the story. And Ryback was able to come back with that. And Ryback had a very short promo before his match and mentioned it. I think the mistake there was not spending more time on, you know, pointing that out. See, I told you Cena couldn't get it done. That's why I didn't want to do it. And kind of harping on that more. Of course, that would be a little bit of the anti-heel that I kept hoping Ryback was going to go to instead of the full-fledged heel that they kind of turned him into. At any rate, I thought at the time when it was playing out, I thought, wow, I don't know if he gets much from being Bryan considering all the abuse he's taken at the hands of the Shield. And then when they, you know, replay that, he gets beat up by the Shield. He's to the point to where he's in the trainer's room. Kane has to go in and come out and be all somber and I will make the Shield pay for what they did, blah, blah, blah. I thought it was a really poor use of Daniel Bryan as far as storyline goes. I agree 100%. He went out there and gave Ryback the best match, singles match he's ever had. I'm very concerned for Extreme Rules at this point. I don't know. You know, we've talked about Cena before, and he gets a bum rap a lot of times for his in-ring ability. I believe that. I think a lot of people just dislike his character. And so they hate on every single thing he does. We've seen members in the forum hate on, you know, the Make-A-Wish kid. Like, oh, he does it to, for the people who like him or whatever. Man, there are people who will just question every single thing he does. And I think it's unfair in the ring. Yeah, he's not a great performer by any stretch of the imagination. But we've seen John Cena with the right opponent go out there and wow us. We've seen it with CM Punk. We saw it with Shawn Michaels. There's a list of people that we can go through that we've seen have had great, great, great matches with. I don't think Ryback's that guy. I mean, sitting here right now looking at Extreme Rules, knowing that it's going to be John Cena versus Ryback, are you expecting a stinker of a match there? I mean, just in-ring quality-wise, I don't, you know, Cena's not a guy that can carry someone. He needs to be carried. Ryback, just not to be funny here, but Ryback's had a hard time carrying anybody, both literally and figuratively when it comes to wrestling. He's not a guy who's going to be able to do that. I'm really concerned for this match. It might be really bad.
You know, that possibility is definitely, you know, on the table. I mean, you can't discount the idea that, you know, if Cena is not 100% and, you know, we know what both men, you know, are capable of, being that Cena can definitely have an excellent match when he's pushed by an extremely competent opponent, and Ryback is kind of in the same boat, but we've never really seen them, you know, take a match and carry it themselves necessarily. It makes for some concerns, and I think you're absolutely right to be concerned. I guess we'll have to see what plays out in the ring, and if they can, you know, use a bag of tricks or however they can get to where they need to go. But there's definitely the risk that it could be, you know, something that the fans aren't necessarily willing to pay for, and that's definitely a risk they have to take on.
And it's Extreme Rules, and I do expect some sort of gimmick to be added to the match eventually to keep them, you know, to give them the shortcuts that they need to pull this off. So, I expect WWE to make it as easy as possible for them to have a great match. Question is, can they do it with that? And we'll find out in a couple of weeks on Extreme Rules. But it was just so funny tonight with Daniel Bryan being involved with both storylines like he did with those Ryback and the Shield. I think in the process of being involved with both of those stories in different ways and just kind of being the mule who got beat from the start of the show to the end, I think he diminished both stories to some degree because he was expected to do too much there and one hurt the other in the process. But we'll talk about it more as we go through the show. Last big thing I want to pull out before we go through it from top to bottom, the World Heavyweight Championship match. This got a lot of love on Raw on Monday. Of course, the second, I guess if you want to call him that, Zeb Coulter, Ricardo Rodriguez, Biggie Langston, in a triple threat match, Ricardo Rodriguez wins, and Del Rio then is able to pick the stipulation for their match. He picked a ladder match. Just quickly on that, Jay, from Raw, what did you think about, well, I guess you can comment on the match if you want to. It was what it was. But the ladder match stipulation, do you like the idea of a ladder match?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. I think they have three guys that are, you know, very capable of having a very good ladder match. We've seen Del Rio in them before. Obviously, both Swagger and Ziggler have won Money in the Bank ladder matches in the past. I mean, and so did Del Rio. But
Del Rio, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think everybody in there is definitely capable of having a ladder match. I mean, and at Extreme Rules, you have to, you know, they tend to take it up a notch as far as the risk level in a lot of these matches. So I'm looking forward to it. I think there's a lot of potential there for a pretty exciting World Heavyweight Championship match. Of all the title matches on the card, I think that one probably has the most potential to, you know, to be something that fans who are really into to ring work to really dig into and enjoy.
Yeah, Jason asked me in .NET Weekly was kind of some similar question. I said, you know, considering the three that were in the ring, I was pretty hyped up for this match to begin with. They didn't have to make it a ladder match to get me excited. It adds to it, certainly it adds to it. I think it's going to be a wild match. I hope that they're given the time and the ability to go out there and kind of wow it out, because I, you know, we know what Ziggler can do, and as you said, we've seen Swagger and Del Rio in ladder matches win them as well. So I like the stipulation and I like what they're going with it. What I don't understand is the fascination with the number two guys in this feud. As far as, again, I talked about, Ricardo and Zeb are on the same level. I realize Ricardo is a trained wrestler and you know, has been, you know, doing more in other places, NXT, and has wrestled under a mask in various places, and is a trained wrestler. And, of course, Zeb Coulter, a.k.a. Dutch Mantel, was a wrestler at one time. But, they're both the kind of hapless sidekicks who can go out there and bump around or whatnot. Langston just makes the whole mix so weird because he's such, you know, he is the wrestler. You've got two managers and a wrestler in there. And I don't know, to me, when they try to do this, when they try to get the three of them involved, and even this week when they, and we'll talk about how all the match played out, but you know, we had the start and stop of various matches with that feud, we end up with a triple threat tag match with all the primary wrestlers and their seconds in there with them. I don't understand the fascination with getting those guys in the ring with Langston. Because at that point, you have to book gimmick after gimmick after gimmick, because in real life, Langston would just come in, lay out both guys, and leave in 30 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, it does look completely preposterous. And that's the part that's, you know, that's kind of a bummer about it, because it really kind of breaks your ability to kind of get into the moment. You know, you don't believe what you're seeing, and there's a good reason for it. And so, you know, they have to do these ridiculous gimmicks that would only work, in, you know, in a pro wrestling or some kind of, you know, entertainment film environment. So, yeah, I definitely don't understand the obsession. I mean, it kind of feels like mascot battles at pro sports games or something, you know. And I guess for the entertainment value and the crowd seem to dig it, I mean, just for that reason, I guess it's okay. But I think, you know, you walk a dangerous line where if you do too much of it, it just makes everything ridiculous.
Yeah, it's, the mascot thing is a great example. If it was, you know, mascot A, mascot B, and then the killer middle linebacker from a third team.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's this weird dichotomy. Like in this show, when it was just Coulter versus Ricardo, I'm like, okay, I can hang with that. They're both the hapless managers. It's silly, but I can live with that. As soon as you add legs to the mix, it's like, no. And I was happy Monday night. My biggest fear as soon as that match started was, oh, God. I mean, I just kind of knew Ricardo was going to win, and my fear was he was going to pin Langston, and they were going to find a way to make that happen, and it just was going to be terrible. But they did a good job of making it work, I thought. So, but let's take this show from start to finish. We'll go back up to the top of the show again. It was the May 3rd edition of SmackDown, taped on April the 30th in Detroit, Michigan. We got a recap of Raw at the very beginning. Michael Cole, Josh Matthews, JBL checking in on commentary. They were better this week than they have been in past weeks. There wasn't near as much bickering between JBL and Josh Matthews. It was good when it was just the two of them. It seemed to work, but with Cole in the mix, when those two start bickering now, it just, I don't know, it comes across as more like they're really bickering and disliking each other and not, you know, not good-natured, fun stuff that should be on commentary. But at any rate, we went straight to the ring. Ryback's music hits. He comes to the ring, had a quick promo where he said he knew John Cena was hurt, and that's why he wouldn't team with him against the Shield on Monday. He said that Cena put himself at risk. He was the one who lost the match, and it proved why he wouldn't do it. He said afterward he hobbled around like a weak and wounded animal, but the law of the jungle said that the bigger, stronger, faster, meaner, whatever animal always eats the weaker, and then he did the Ryback rules thing. Before we get to the first match, let me ask you, because Jason and I still don't know, Ryback rules. Is it Ryback rules the noun, as in these are Ryback's rules? Or is it Ryback rules the verb, as in I rule over everything? I still don't know what the hell he means by that.
I'm pretty sure it's the verb. I think he's just trying to indicate that he's taking over the WWE. At least that's what I understood it to be. I could be wrong, obviously, but I lean towards the verb.
See, I lean towards the noun. That's what I'm saying. I don't understand.
Yeah.
It's so vague.
It's not clear, so that's one thing he needs to work on. But, the promo was mercifully short. I guess that's the best thing you could say about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when Daniel Bryan came out next, he had a really good pop from the crowd. Detroit really liked a lot of these guys tonight. Daniel Bryan was one of them. That led to our first match, Ryback defeating Daniel Bryan in about 13 minutes. Really good match. Jake and I talked about this a few minutes ago. A really, really good match. Daniel Bryan stayed in control for a good chunk of the match. In fact, it was kind of at the end where Ryback really took control and had his sustained offense going into the end. The finish on it comes with they ended up spilling to the floor. Bryan jumps onto the apron and tries for his running knee, but Ryback catches him, drives it back into the ring post a couple of times, rolls him in the ring. It's two deadlift power bombs from there, backs up for the meat hook clothesline, and then shell shock for the victory. But up until that point, Bryan had given him all he could handle. I thought Ryback sold well. I thought that Bryan, one of the things I've always heard about the guy, when I've talked to the guys who I've worked with on the indie scene who have got an opportunity to work with him before he went to WWE, one of the things they kept saying about was he understands his opponent. He will, he'll talk to you and find out what you're capable of doing, and he really understands what he can do with a guy in the ring. And I think more than anything, that's what this showed here, was that he went out there, he attacked Ryback, but did it in a way that was believable, because it was just, when he would get on runs, it would be frenetic offense, and Ryback would slowly chip down, power back, but then Bryan would be right back on him. And they told a great story here. There's very little to complain about this match. I don't know if Ryback got anything off of the win for all the reasons we've already talked about, but the match quality itself was very surprising.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good length. I mean, they managed to, trade some fairly convincing offense throughout. I mean, there were times when both men were dominant throughout, and I just enjoyed what Bryan was able to get out of Ryback. I don't think Cena's going to be able to get that kind of match out of Ryback, at least not without, the bag of tricks and weapons and whatever else they can do to generate some extra suspense. But it was a very fun television match, and I thought, it started out the show at a pretty good pace. Like, there are things to pick out of here, that are not particularly likable. I mean, you don't like to see Bryan put into a position where he's got to carry two angles. But other than that, I was just I was really surprised by the quality, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a good way to open the show. Like I said, we went right to a match, and it was a good match. So, it was a good way to open the show. Again, I think it just happens, and we're kind of done with Daniel Bryan from there. I feel a lot differently about this overall at the end than I do now, because when Bryan comes back for the Shield stuff, I think it kind of takes away what happens here. I realize it's three guys attacking him, but there's something to the fact that because he's been the guy that's taken pin after pin after pin in these triple threat in these six-man matches that they've been having with the Shield, he's the guy that takes the pin again and again. And because of that, he goes out there, he jobs out to Ryback, not a big deal. I thought it was flimsy how they got there. Ryback refused to team with him, and that's why Daniel Bryan wants to face him. Well, but John Cena filled in. I realize you lost because of Cena, but it was a flimsy excuse to get there. But at least they found a way to get there, and we're going to come to a match here in a minute that they had no friggin' reason to have, and just like Monday, it served absolutely no purpose. So they at least, they at least tried to make this a reasonable match, but I think coming back with Daniel Bryan involved with the Shield hurt this match in the end. As it was happening, though, great match. I thought it was really well done. After that, we got a – the announced team kind of narrated a video that talked about that second match, as I called it, from Raw, the triple threat with Del Rio, with Ricardo winning and Del Rio picking the ladder match. We went backstage to Renee Young, whose name I still had to look up. Damn it, I cannot remember her name to save my life. But she tried to interview Ricardo Rodriguez. He was jacked up, cut his promo in Spanish. He at one point even grabbed her and kissed her on the face. And Del Rio came up, told him to calm down, and you know, please forgive him. He's very excited and turned around and walked off. And, I mean, it was a cute little moment for Ricardo. I don't know that it was necessary, but, you know, it was one of those things. He's such a likable character. I mean, he really is. He's just a sympathetic character. You want to like the guy. You want to cheer for him. That's why the babyface turn for Del Rio worked as well as it did, because he saved Ricardo, who everybody loved even when they were the heels. So, I mean, it was a cute little moment, unnecessary but cute, I thought.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there isn't a whole lot to add to that part of it. I mean, it was just a neat moment, and you could tell, you know, how beloved Ricardo is by the crowd, and you know, the guy could probably get away with a whole lot of things and still be a babyface. So it was a fun moment, and I thought, you know, they both guys kind of came off as kind of charming in that role. So it worked for them. I mean, it didn't add a whole lot to the show overall, but it was kind of a fun little moment.
Why can I not remember Renee Young's name? Why do I have to look it up every single time?
I don't know, man. It took me a couple weeks, but I managed to remember this time when I saw her. So it's just a matter of adjusting, I guess. I don't know. I guess she's kind of non-distinctive in a way. She looks a lot like a lot of other WWE women, so maybe they just blend together.
Yeah, I don't know. She came out, I was like, oh, that's... Damn, I got to look up her name. Frustrating, but after commercial, we had Zack Ryder standing in the ring. What's up with Zack here? I know we spent a lot of time on this, but has he quit taking his hair Viagra? I mean, it used to be take care, spike your hair. Now it's more like take care, part your hair.
Yeah, they made mention of his online show a little bit and how he's trying to dedicate himself to being more serious, and so he's not doing the glasses and the spiky hair anymore. So I guess this is part of his reformed and new look, and we'll see where it takes him. But it still doesn't seem like they're taking him very seriously, even if he's trying to.
Yeah, he'll probably get that shit over, and they'll ignore him again anyway, but whatever. He was in the ring, Fandango, and Summer Rae, the new blonde. It looks like she might be with him full time now. She's been with him for several weeks now, and haven't seen the brunette in some time. I don't know if that's the plan. If they're going to get her involved, if they're going to get his partner involved, as Jason has called for several times, I mean, it makes sense to get someone who's actually trained as a wrestler to do that, but that led to, and the interesting thing about Fandango's entrance, too, was it seemed that the fans were booing him. We never know with SmackDown how much is piped in, but it looked like they were booing him. You could see several people in the crowd doing the thumbs down thing, standing next to people who were standing up and doing, and Fandangoing. They were, you know, pointing their fingers in the air and dancing. It leads to a really weird sound for his entrances, doesn't it, when you have half the crowd booing and the other half of the crowd singing.
Yeah, it's definitely an odd mixed reaction. I can't imagine that's what they were going for all this time. But, I mean, he's getting reactions from everybody, good or bad. So, I mean, and, you know, there's nothing worse than apathy, and he's definitely not getting that. So I guess he can't really complain at this point.
And, of course, that was our second match, Fandango squashing Zack Ryder 2 minutes and 19 seconds. Ryder got in a couple of moves, but it's just he went for the Rough Rider. Fandango ducked it, hit that side Russian leg sweep, neck breaker thing that he does, and then the, as I'm now going to refer to it from now on, the career-shortening top rope leg drop. Jake, why the hell are they still making him do this move? We thought he had transitioned away from it because we didn't see it for maybe 2 weeks, and now it's back again. Considering how crazy WWE is about keeping their guys safe and banning moves like pile drivers and other drivers and that sort of thing, it just amazes me that they're willing to let this happen, and especially now that he's gotten into the gimmick where, you know, unlike Cena, who just kind of jumps off and straight down onto the guy, which is bad enough, now he's, you know, over the past couple of weeks, we've seen it now where he's setting guys up on the other side of the ring, and so he has to leap all the way across and come crashing down. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's definitely not something that I would like to see him do long term. I can't imagine you're going to be able to continue that and you know, keep your hips healthy. I mean, eventually something's got to give there. And we've seen a lot of wrestlers who have done these types of maneuvers over the years have long term health problems. So, I hope they continue the transition away. I thought they were going to that that some kind of moonlight drive or something like that, but it looks like that's now just a setup move for the leg drop. So. I'm not sure, which direction they're going with that, but I hope, they eventually find him a different finisher, because I think, if they want him to have longevity, they're going to have to need to get away from it.
Yeah, it's frustrating to watch play out. I mean, you look at Hogan, and yes, Hogan was much heavier than the Johnny Curtis is, but Hogan also wasn't doing it off the top rope, it was just standing in it. He did it for years, and, look, obviously he's not going to do this forever, but I hate to see guys put their body at risk like that. I don't understand. There's so much. The moonlight drive move, as you talked about, it works for his gimmick even. You know what I'm saying? It looks like a dance move that goes too far and somebody gets hurt. I thought it was great when they added it in, but not good enough for whatever reason. It's frustrating. Not nearly as frustrating. Oh, and to her benefit this time at the end of the match when he did his name gimmick, Summer Rae was able to get down and do the split. She wasn't able to do quite so well on Monday, so it worked out by the next night in Detroit. We come backstage from there to the moment that it's just kind of the what the hell did I just see moment. Kayla's walking backstage with flowers. She bumps into Natalya and Kali. Natty asks her about the flowers they're from. She goes, they're from that same secret admirer. She reads her a text from a blocked number that basically says, you're beautiful in the ring and out. I love you. I can't wait to meet you or see you or some shit like that. And then Natty says, Kali has got the best advice. He gives the best advice. And Kali turns to Caitlin and says, and I quote, and walked away, and Natty goes, see, and leaves. Jake, what the hell was that?
I don't know. I actually went back and tried to listen to what he had to say like 3 or 4 times to see if I could pick up exactly what was said, but I might have got a word out of that. I don't know. I mean, maybe that was the point, was that you weren't supposed to hear it and it was supposed to be some kind of decoder ring type event, but I don't know where they're going with this angle. I mean, it's nice that they're paying attention to the Divas Championship and giving her something to help her develop, but man, it definitely was not helped by Kali's mumbling here. And Natalya, man, I mean, I keep saying this, but what a waste of her talents.
Yeah, Jason pointed out that it's obviously somebody backstage laughing at Kali that thinks every time Kali talks, it's just hilarious. And look, on some level, it is hilarious because you can't understand. Like you said, you went back a few times. I think he tells her at one point to be cool or be calm or something, but that's really all I got. Like, I mean, he said about 6 or 7 things, I'm guessing that based upon pauses. They could have been commas and not periods. I'm not entirely sure. Because you can't understand him. I mean, it was really bad. It's funny on some level, but this was not funny. It was over, and I'm sitting there going, what did I just see? How do I even write what just happened? I don't even know. So bad. Oh, God. Then we got the video of John Cena's involvement with World Wish Day. I think we should name it Everybody Cheer John Cena Day, because it's the only day of the year where everybody cheers John Cena is on World Wish Day. We cut backstage. Renee Young is back there. You have to look her name up this time because I remembered from earlier in the report. She interviews Jeff Coulter about his match with Ricardo coming up. Jeff butchered her name. I think he called her Rhonda or something like that, and called her part of the lamestream media. As someone who's involved in politics, can I just say that I hate that term, lamestream media? They are lame. I just tired of hearing it. It sucks. Anyway, but Zeb said he was sick. He had a fever and nausea and all this other stuff, but he got up and he went to work because that's what real Americans do. He said his win was given to an illegal immigrant, the illegal immigrant Ricardo Rodriguez, and said that he was guilty of theft. He said he could call the police and handle it that way, but he was going to rectify it tonight by handling it in the ring. And then, of course, he gave the We the People line and walked off from there. Was it just me, or did Dutch seem lost at one point in the middle of this. There was one point where he was going down the track, and then he kind of went, and seemed to change directions.
Yeah, I kind of caught that, too. I don't know, you know, if that was planned or part of the character that they're trying to introduce where, you know, he isn't quite all there mentally or something. I mean, maybe if it continues to happen, we'll have to figure that out. But, yeah, it definitely seemed like he got halfway or partway through that that promo and then you know, kind of switched gears. But like I said, I don't know if it was intentional, like they're trying to tell a story with the character, or if it was just a flub. I'm not sure. But it wasn't a terrible promo, but it just continues to be the right-wing kind of political stereotypes, and I don't think that's really going to sell many tickets, to be honest.
They got good heat when they came out after this. I mean, to be fair, they got good heat here, but Detroit seemed to be a very hot crowd. Either that or WWE would just pump in everything for everybody because they got good heat. But you're right, I don't think their staying power, especially you know, when they had three Hispanic wrestlers that he could work with, when you have Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara and Alberto Rio sitting there, okay, you could apparently run this for a few months, for several months, and just have them transition between guys. But when Rey and Sin Cara are hurt or out for whatever reason in Rey's case, and all you've got is Del Rio, I think they're in trouble with this act, and I hate that because I like Coulter. Like you said, it wasn't a bad promo. It's just the content leaves a lot to be desired. I hope they can find a way to morph this into something other than, you know, we hate the Mexicans or whatever. But it was just weird. If you get a chance to see this video, just kind of watch them talking about it. He's going down one path, then gives a really long, and then seems to change directions with it. I wasn't sure if he got off track or what. And like you said, you would think with a taped show, if they would go back and reshoot that. Maybe they're trying to develop something here. Maybe they're trying to build in for that transition as they get away from it. After, I assume, what will be the blow off, at least for a title shot for Zack Ryder after the Extreme Rules match. As a commercial, we're going into the string of matches here, and it's a string, so try to keep up. I didn't book this, so please don't get mad at me for throwing the information at you hot and heavy here. This is how it worked out. Ricardo and Del Rio made their entrance before the break. After the break, you had Dolph Ziggler sitting in on commentary, AJ and Biggie Langston there with him, though not plugged into the headsets. Zeb Coulter, Jack Swagger are out. It was supposed to be, and it started as Ricardo Rodriguez versus Zeb Coulter. Ricardo wins that one by disqualification when Coulter took advantage of a distraction from Swagger and was able to attack Ricardo from behind, kind of clip the leg. He had been working Ricardo over. Ricardo gets an opportunity to charge at him with like a shoulder tackle thing. Swagger quickly flies in the ring, clotheslines him. 1:44 in that match, Ricardo wins by DQ. Before, you know, Del Rio jumps in at that point, ends up clotheslining Swagger over the top rope. Teddy Long's music hits. He comes out and says, no, it's a tag match now, so get back in the ring and let's do this. I thought it telling that even Dolph Ziggler, who was on commentary, goes, wow, who couldn't see Teddy Long coming out and making this the match? Yeah, exactly. Now you know how we feel each and every week. That led to our fourth match after commercial, which was joined in progress, Ricardo Rodriguez and Alberto Del Rio versus Zeb Coulter and Jack Swagger. That one lasted 1:16 of aired TV time and also ended by disqualification when, for absolutely no reason whatsoever, Biggie Langston and Dolph Ziggler jump in the ring and attack everybody. So that one ends, and unfortunately, Ziggler wasn't there to lampoon his own match at this time because, once again, Teddy Long music hits. He comes out and restarts the match yet again as a triple threat tag match for our fifth match, at which point Ricardo Rodriguez and Alberto Rio defeated Zeb Coulter, Jack Swagger, Dolph Ziggler, Biggie Langston in 5:48. Del Rio got Ziggler to tap out with a cross arm breaker after, of course, the match descended into madness and melee with people flying all over the place. This is a standard gimmick for wrestling. We've seen it done in wrestling for years and years, and WWE loves doing it, having the general manager come out, restart the match is a slightly different thing once somebody interferes. It's silly, but it's okay. I wonder if this was the best use of time to put heat on this match. I don't know that having Coulter and Ricardo wrestle – puts any heat on the actual triple threat match, and I don't know that ending it up with it being a triple threat tag team match puts any heat on it, because they went through so many machinations to get there, Jake. I think that by, when they finally get to that final match, which that triple threat tag match by itself may have been able to put some heat on the Extreme Rules match, I think by the time we get here, it's so convoluted that anything that happens here doesn't necessarily carry over to the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're exactly right. I think they kind of overplayed their hand here. They went through too many, you know, different series of, you know, the disqualification after disqualification, finally getting, you know, the babyface team a little bit of their, you know, their shine back, I guess you could say. And by the time they got there, I mean, I was just completely burnt out on the whole thing. I thought the best moments of the match were when Ziggler was on commentary, and as soon as they pulled him into the ring, I don't think it really took off from there. I mean, I do like the interaction between, you know, these different acts. I mean, I think the, you know, the managers, you know, interact well together, Ricardo and even Big E, you know, at times. I mean, they do have a certain level of humor about them, but I'm not sure they're going for humor with this story. So it's definitely confusing for me, and I think they're burning up a lot of goodwill with this type of stuff.
One of the things I noticed on commentary was something Jason pointed out in .NET Weekly this week about Dolph Ziggler, his reaction to the ladder match announcement. I tend to agree with him. I've said for a long time now that Dolph Ziggler could be the Ric Flair-esque character, not in charisma and personality. I'm not trying to compare him to the Nature Boy, but in the stories that Flair often told as champion, which is the wormy heel. And I, you know, WWE loves to book their heels as wormy heels. But I think a guy like Ziggler is someone who can pull it off, because he goes in, he bumps around, he makes everybody look great, and then all of a sudden he's able to get the win, or he gets the win with help from Langston, whatever. But with him, they're going a little bit the other way because of that show-off character they tried to establish. And I don't know that the show-off character and the wormy heel are mutually exclusive. I think you can do both. But I'm interested, Jake, in your thoughts on this. Jason said what he had hoped he would get from Ziggler after the announcement of the ladder match was the, can you believe this, I'm being screwed. Not only do I have to face two guys, but it's also a ladder match and yada, yada, yada. Instead of taking that approach, he went down the approach that Jason didn't want to see, which is, no, I don't mind the ladder match. In fact, I'm excited about it because I'm the most athletic. I am the show-off. I'm the blah, blah, blah. So, of course, I'm going to win. Which did you want to see? And do you think Ziggler did a good enough job of selling himself as the show-off here?
Yeah, I mean, he does a decent job of getting over the fact that he's the show-off and he's not afraid of being in these you know, these big match situations and these high-pressure situations. And, you know, he at least seems confident, but like I said, if they're trying to, you know, go for the wormy heel type character, I'm not sure that's a tack to take. So I kind of have to agree with Jason. If they truly are trying to make him a Flair style, or maybe that's not a completely accurate description, but if you're trying to put him in the position to be a consistent wormy heel, you probably shouldn't have him seem so confident going into the ladder match. Maybe he should be a little bit more insecure about about his chances at victory, and that would play into the psychology that they want to have during the match. So I kind of have to go with Jason's thoughts on that one.
Yeah, I don't think the two things are necessarily mutually exclusive. I especially with AJ there, I mean, what I'd love to see is kind of a combination of the two, is him bitching and being like, what, I can't believe I have to do this. It's two guys, triple threat match, bad enough, now it's a ladder match, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it's that way because Del Rio interfered in the match on Raw. And then have AJ come in and be like, but baby, you're the show-off. You know, I mean, she's there, do something with her, not just have her skip around and, you know, have her, but you're the show off. You're the whole show. And yeah, that's right. I'm the show off. I'm going to win anyway. I think you can do both. I don't know. I mean, I like him more as the wormy heel too. I think he would be better off being the guy who complains about that stuff and let AJ and Biggie Langston be, you know, but we're here for you, or or you know, we've got your back or whatever to get him some spine. But it wasn't bad here. Just I was kind of curious to your thoughts about that as well. From there, we cut backstage. There's a camera on the floor. You can hear but cannot see anything other than, you know, some chairs maybe in the background or whatever. But you can hear somebody getting beat up, obviously. The camera gets picked up, and it's Shield promo time. They cut another one of their promos about putting Cena down, about putting Undertaker down. You know, they said that both of those guys fell to the Hounds of Justice. They were going to do the same thing to Kane next. Ambrose was going to take care of business at the end of the night. They set the camera down. Then you could see Daniel Bryan laying on the ground, and I think they got in one or two more kicks on it before walking away and going to commercial while Bryan laid there just, you know, selling this beating that happened. What do you think? We talked about this. We talked about Daniel Bryan and this a lot, so, I don't know if there's anything to add there, but what do you think about the Shield promo itself?
You know, I've been enjoying the Shield promos lately more so than I was prior to WrestleMania, where I thought they were treading water. I think they at least sound focused now, and that's part of what was missing before. I mean, you and I have talked about this for forever, that we keep hoping that they kind of lay out their case for what justice is, but I just don't think we're ever going to see that at this point. So, I think what they're managing to do now by choosing their targets and sounding a lot more focused in their promos is at least, you know, give us a reason to continue to tune into what they're saying. And I think their delivery has always been pretty good. So as long as the material, and the content of their promos is written well by the creative staff, I think they're very capable of delivering very interesting promos. And I'm typically, I stay engaged to what they're saying because they have a very interesting pace and delivery style. So I've been enjoying their promos lately a lot more so than let's say pre-WrestleMania 29.
Yeah, I think in the past couple of weeks, Dean Ambrose has solidified the fact that he's going to be a star one day in WWE. I think that's become very, very clear. The only thing I dislike about that, I'm willing to accept them not coming out and laying out that definition of justice for them. As long as they're doing what they're doing, like with Daniel Bryan and Kane, it's when they get involved with John Cena and Ryback, and Ryback's a heel now. I mean, I think they're still trying to keep him a little bit of a tweener, but they've gone so far with the heel stuff already that he's a heel. I don't think anybody sees him any way other than that. So when they attack the heel, I just get confused. You know, it's like, okay, I'm willing to accept that you're really outside the realm of everybody and the traditional babyface heel thing, but you got to tell me why. You know, if they're just attacking Daniel Bryan and Kane because they're the baby faces and the Shield heels and as bad guys, that's what they do, that's fine. You don't have to give me any further explanation to that. But when you start attacking other heels, I need something. And so it's kind of an interesting thing for me because depending on what they're doing, I like what they're doing or I don't. This I like because, again, they just beat up Daniel Bryan because he's the babyface champion and they're the bad guys. I'm okay with that. And I thought this was very good, the promo that they did. And again, I think all three of these guys have money written all over them. I think Reigns continues to impress me. The fact this doesn't sound like an idiot on the mic, and he was the one that was a big concern. Seth Rollins, a.k.a. Tyler Black in Ring of Honor, fantastic in-ring worker. Mic work was always a question. He has at least found a comfortable role. I just continue to love what they do every time they appear on the screen. I just always like the mix of what they do sometimes. After commercial, video recap, Triple H and Brock Lesnar feud, or at least the post-WrestleMania feud that's building to their match. We got that video. And then two refs and a trainer fan found Daniel Bryan on the floor, and they're like, Daniel, what happened? What happened? Are the refs not watching the show either, Jake? Is that what's going on?
It would appear so, yeah. I mean, I really don't get how inconsistent WWE is with how their performers deal with the awareness of the cameras backstage. Like, it seems like sometimes they're way too aware of the cameras, and other times they're way too oblivious. It's a strange mix that they don't get right very often.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I realize that the Shield, you know, are using their own cam. They're, you know, a handheld cam, so in theory there's not somebody else, a cameraman back there that saw the attack. I'm just saying it was shown on that giant-ass screen in the arena. Nobody saw that. Nobody on staff saw that. And it was like, oh, my God, Daniel, what happened to you? Give me a break.
Yeah.
You know, just like you said, have some consistency with that. But they grab a trainer, and they help him up to his feet, and they're going to take him to the trainer's room. And then we switched from very relevant stuff to, once again, another irrelevant match. Randy Orton makes his entrance. Huge pop for that guy. Damian Sandow makes his next. Good heat for that guy. No promo. No microphone handed to Damian Sandow, who in 30 seconds has the ability to give that match purpose. But nope, they didn't give him the mic. They didn't let him play the best part of his gimmick. They just have him come to the ring and then lose to Randy Orton. Sixth match, Randy Orton defeats Damian Sandow in about 9 minutes. At least four of those minutes were in commercial break. And so it's, I mean, there's very little of final report because we saw very little of this match. And what it was essentially an Orton squash. I mean, he started strong. Sandow got in a lucky break to knock Orton to the floor before commercial. And then we come back and we're back 10 seconds. Orton hits a back suplex and starts a comeback for all intents and purposes. He hits the rope DDT and a clean RKO right in the middle of the ring for the win. I realized this was to get him out there for what happens post-match, which we'll talk about in a second. But, you know, damn it, they gave him this big 17-minute match, whatever it was, with Cody Rhodes on Monday, and then the other half of Rhodes Scholars gets 9 minutes counting commercial for this show. But they don't mean anything, and we've seen these guys lose so much. Jason and I talked about this on Thursday as well. I'm for WWE going back to enhancement talent, going back to the Mulkey Brothers days and that sort of thing. Because you look at guys like Sandow who were just wasted. And you know what? Even putting that aside, again, they could have given him a microphone, let him cut one of his promos, 60 seconds, 30 seconds. He would have had that crowd ready to see him get beat up. As it was just a meaningless match.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, they really, dropped the ball. I mean, they had a pretty good moment with Orton and Rhodes on Monday, and you would think, you know, Sandow would at least have something to say about that. He could have gotten the crowd into that match pretty quickly. So I don't understand, the approach they took. Maybe they didn't want to create the impression that Orton is in a feud with Team Rhodes Scholars when they clearly want him focused on the Big Show. But, there was a missed opportunity there to give that crowd, a treat, because I think every one of Sandow's promos are generally, at least entertaining, if not compelling.
So frustrating. And then after the match, we finally got what all of this was about. Big Show's music hits. He comes out cutting a promo. He says, you know what? Congratulations on your win, Randy. Another impressive win. You're an amazing individual, but not such a great team player. He said if Orton's ego hadn't been so big and Orton had let him gotten the tag at WrestleMania, perhaps they would have beaten the Shield and Orton wouldn't have gotten knocked out. Orton standing there, of course, watching Big Show walk down to the ring, not paying attention, so Damian Sandow grabs it from behind, hits his straitjacket neckbreaker finisher. Show busts out laughing, really over-the-top fake laugh at Orton, and says, now that was funny, and they got real serious and said, but what won't be funny is what happens at Extreme Rules, what I do to you, Randy Orton, and then left the ring with Orton sitting there selling his pack and looking frustrated at Show. I thought it was a good promo from Show, but as they said, it sounds like a challenge to me. They don't have a match, Jake. Do you think that Big Show might have done a better job than said, but Extreme Rules, I'll show you it won't be funny if you've got the guts or something. I mean, he didn't really challenge him. He just said, I'm going to do something terrible to you in Extreme Rules. They don't have an announced match.
Yeah, that was kind of bizarre. It kind of felt like a promo that was a week ahead of its time for some reason. They hadn't really established, they've established the feud, obviously, but they haven't established a match, and you would think that if they were going to have Show cut a promo like this, that he would at least make the challenge. But maybe he just flubbed a line or something. I'm not sure what happened there, but it definitely did seem out of place.
Yeah, it was just kind of strange to me. Did you like the promo, though? I mean, did you think Show was good here?
Yeah. I've actually really kind of enjoyed what Big Show has been doing, since they got him involved with Sheamus and Orton again. You know, I think he's better in a heel role where he's able to play into his confidence as kind of a giant. I think they got away from that with what they were doing with him in Del Rio, where he was almost playing the vulnerable heel type role, and it didn't really fit him. But they've kind of gotten him back into being confident again, and I think this is where Big Show really kind of shines.
Yeah, and I predicted these four, Big Show, Orton, Sheamus, and Mark Henry in a Fatal Four-Way match I'm less confident we get that at Extreme Rules, but I still think it's the ultimate end for this. And at some point, those four are going to be in the ring together, every man for himself. Maybe that's how they get Ziggler's next number one contender after they finish blowing off whatever's going on with that triple threat match. So we may see singles matches. We may yet see it at Extreme Rules, but I'm less confident now. They seem to be settling into singles matches with both of those guys. We come backstage from there. Matt Stryker asked Kane about – Kane was coming out of the training room, and Matt Stryker asked Kane about Daniel Bryan's condition. Kane said he was going to make the Shield pay for what they did to Daniel and his brother. He said he knew that they were going to take him down eventually. I know what's going to happen out there. They're going to swarm me, and they're going to take me down eventually, but I'm going to take as many of them as I could. He said, we're all going on a journey to a little place they call hell. I like this from Kane. It was a little bit silly, but Kane promos always are a little bit silly at this point, especially since he's been, you know, when he's the serious demon character, I'm a little more forgiving, but when he's been the serious guy or the comedy guy now for so long, and doing the hug it out and all that crap with Daniel Bryan, this turned out to be like, we're all going to hell. To me, it comes across as cheesy and over the top, but it's Kane. I mean, it's kind of, it is what it is with him. That's how they book him sometimes, but I thought this was pretty good here, but I think really more than anything, again, what hurt this is that I didn't care about Daniel Bryan's beatdown because I'd already seen him beaten by Ryback earlier.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get invested in that stuff when they give you too much of it, and I think that was the case here where we just, you know, Bryan just looks like a punching bag, but... Yeah, I don't really mind Kane kind of getting back into more of a serious role. I think he's going to have to when they eventually split up the tag team, so maybe they're just trying to work that in here as kind of a transition period, and that's fine by me. I mean, they've had Kane and Bryan doing the comedy thing for so long, and I've just kind of missed them being at least taking themselves seriously. So I'm hoping they transition back to that, at some point. Maybe after they lose the tag team titles, they'll get more serious about it. But I didn't mind the promo. You know, I like Kane. I think he's underrated. As far as what he can do, in as far as his work is concerned, and I think he's got a longevity that few people have ever been able to attain in WWE, so you got to give him credit for that too. So I don't necessarily dislike what they did here. I mean, maybe it seemed like too soon coming off of how much comedy he's been doing, but I've actually rather enjoyed their involvement with the Shield.
And it's maybe poor verbiage, but he's always the guy, you know, he's the most slept-on guy in WWE. People are always, Kane sucks. The next thing you know, he's in the best program that's going on out there. It never ceases to amaze me how he's a guy that people just dismiss and then immediately turns around and is the best thing on television. So expect him to do whatever works because he's been very good. Like you said, his staying power is unbelievable there. The Raw Rebound video aired. They once again covered the six-man tag match with The Shield and John Cena and how it played out on Monday Night Raw. And then an arm wrestling table stood in the ring. Oh, no, Jake, please, no. We're not going to get more of this kind of silly stuff. But we are. Mark Henry makes his entrance. They get a video of the stupid tug-of-war segment on Raw from Monday. You can see it coming at this point. They've laid it out there. They've pointed at it. They're going, look. Guess what's going to happen right here? Sheamus makes his entrance. She was credited to a gigantic pop in Detroit. They get in the ring, they do the whole, messing with each other. Henry's demanding Sheamus wipe his hands with a towel and then pulls his arm away at the last second right before they lock up. Finally, they lock up for the arm wrestling contest. The ref says, go. I'm surprised we actually got a finish on this. I figured somebody's hand would fly off and they would go back to it. But they went a different route here. Mark Henry ends up winning. They had a little bit of back and forth. Sheamus looked like he was going to win, and then Henry powered him over and won. Henry's celebrating in the ring. Sheamus takes the mic and says, you know what, you might have the strongest right arm, but you don't have the strongest left arm. I think, let's do it left arm. Henry says, no, I've already won. He goes to leave. Sheamus called him a chicken, so Henry comes back, agrees to do the left arm. Now Sheamus is the one messing with Henry, pulling away at the last second, playing mind games with him. They lock up. It's so over the top the way Sheamus is acting and shaking the whole ring. I mean, just everything is shaking the ring the way he's bouncing around. He finally settles for a split second. The ref says, go, and he punches Mark Henry in the face, hits him with a bro kick. Everybody cheers. Whatever. It's a stupid arm wrestling thing. But the thing that kind of confuses me is this is what's WWE has this idea of, you know, I realize Steve Austin made a ton of money for this company being the heel that everybody cheered, because, let's face it, Stone Cold Steve Austin was a heel most of the time in his antics, and this was heelish stuff. Henry didn't cheat, he won fair and square, the other guy gets mad, punches him in the face, hits him with his finisher, leaves him laying, posing over top of him. The crowd's going crazy. I understand Steve Austin made a ton of money doing that sort of thing, but Sheamus is not Steve Austin, he's not been positioned in the same way. And this sort of thing just frustrates me because Sheamus looks like a chump here. I don't think that Sheamus gets anything from this. I think he looks stupid.
Yeah, I mean, and there is a pretty significant difference, compared to Steve Austin's, best runs as the anti-hero, which WWE pretty much borrowed from comic books. I mean, the whole anti-hero phenomenon, but the strange thing is, in Austin's era, at least, you had just about every heel that he faced was backed up by Vince McMahon and the company. And so it made some sense that he would go to desperate measures to combat what he thought was, somebody trying to rig the rules against him. And so you could see why he would act the way he does. I mean, we have no reason to to justify why Sheamus would act like a heel here. I mean, he's really doing heel type tactics, losing a contest, and then using his verbal skills to trick somebody into coming back into the ring, and then kicking him in the face. I mean, it's really quite heelish what he's doing, and the crowd is into it, obviously, because Henry is at least over as the monster heel. But it really puts Sheamus in a weird place where if they continue doing this, then they have to have a match at Extreme Rules where it's going to feel like they've taken a lot of steam off of Henry for no reason, and I don't really understand it.
Yeah, I said Henry, I mean, I said Sheamus looks stupid. He doesn't look stupid. He looks like a jerk, is what he looks like, as what you were saying. And the flip side is, Henry looks like a moron. I mean, see it coming. It's like he got screwed over on Raw, and you're going to go back for that left arm thing and just take a punch and a blow kick? I mean, how stupid is this guy?
Right, yeah, it really does, make Henry look like an idiot. And in the past, when Henry was, when they were really behind Henry as a heel, he was like one of the smartest heels in the company. I mean, he rarely put himself in a position to get duped like that. So it's very strange where they're going with these guys. And I understand, they're kind of in a program away from the title, and so maybe they're not putting as much effort into it. But man, you'd think they could put something together that would make sense, but it just doesn't yet.
Yeah, I couldn't believe when Henry won. I thought, oh, okay, that's weird. Maybe they're surprising me here, and they're not going to go back and revisit this. And I honestly thought Henry was going to hit Sheamus at the beginning, and that's how, or that when Sheamus was about to win, Henry was going to hit it. And so I thought that's where they were going. And then when he went, it was like, oh no, why is Mark Henry a buffoon all of a sudden? Like you said, he was a smart heel before. What the hell happened? Just a very frustrating segment. The live crowd loved it, and the people cheered for Sheamus. And I'm not saying he's going to just be a heel, but if he comes up against someone and has to play the white stallion babyface, for whatever reason, because that's the heel they've got him working with, I just think they're going to have a hard time getting it over because he looks like, the popular guy who everybody loves, but is an a-hole. I think that's the problem here. So
He smiles way too much to be an anti-hero, really. I mean,
exactly.
he looks way too goofy for that role. I mean, Steve Austin, you could buy it because he was always aware enough of the character that he was playing that his facial expressions didn't completely, beguile his character. He wasn't completely playing something different with his face than he was with his actions. And I think Sheamus does that a lot of the time where he's when they have him just doing the white stallion thing, he doesn't come off as being resolved enough. He's always joking and smiling, and he has the same problem when he's trying to do the anti-hero. When he should be serious and intimidating, he just comes across like he's goofing his way through things. So, yeah, I mean, they really need to get him back on the heel side of things, to be honest. I think, his early character in WWE was much, much better than what they have him doing now.
Yeah, and you mentioned about Austin Smiley versus Sheamus smiling, too. I think when you did see Austin smile in the ring, the smile seemed to be for himself, you know, like he had pleased himself, where Sheamus was like he's pandering to the crowd.
Right.
You know, and that's part of it. So, yeah, and, of course, the Lucky Charms character background is not helping him try to be this guy either. So it's a mess. I like Sheamus versus Henry. I mean, we saw Sheamus and Big Show have incredible matches that we didn't think they could have. And I think Henry is more mobile and is just, you know, in a moment in his career where he's doing the best work of his life. So I'm looking forward to this match that these two will ultimately have. I just think there could be a better story around it. The one they're doing doesn't make a lot of sense right now. We got a video recapping Shield taking out Undertaker, and then of course Dean Ambrose and Kane were hyped for next, and that's what we got. Seventh and final match of the night, Dean Ambrose defeating Kane in 11 minutes. This was really well done. They told a really intelligent story here. Kane was the second guy out. The Shield were out first. Kane comes out with the title belt, clears everybody, knocks out the other two guys, and then attacks Ambrose to start the match. So he had an opportunity to get some early offense in and be the guy in control early. And then during the commercial break is when Ambrose was able to take control back. Kane, of course, starts his comeback, hits a choke slam, does the throat gesture thing, picks him up for the tombstone, and that's when the Shield begins to interfere. The ref does not call for the bell because, well, Kane handles them. He knocks Ambrose off the apron and onto the announce table. He ends up throwing Reigns into the stairs, but all the distraction allows Ambrose to grab him and hit like a forward DDT. He made like a side rushing leg sweep that went forward into a DDT type move to win in 11 minutes, about 11 minutes. Let's take the match before the post-match stuff. I like the story that they told. I like how they got Kane in the ring and they played off of what they said earlier, which is, I know they're going to get me, but I'm going to get as many of them as I can in the process. And he just came out and laid out the other two and then went to work on Ambrose.
Yeah, I thought they went to, you know, they followed their storyline from earlier perfectly. I mean, Kane got the best of them early on and then the match began, and then it wasn't until, you know, most of the way through the match before they recovered and started to, you know, to get after him again. So I thought the psychology worked. I liked the chemistry that Ambrose and Kane seemed to have together. They seemed to work well. So all in all, it was a very good match, and I enjoyed that one too.
And then post-match, of course, the Shield starts to attack. It all but knocked down right at the very end, obviously, because the finish came very fast after Kane had taken out Rollins and Reigns. But they recovered, they circled the ring, they attacked. Kane wins. He manages to fight all three of them off. I think this was the moment where he stomped on Rollins' face at one point. Rollins took a really nasty bump right at the beginning of this thing where he was holding on to Kane's leg, and Kane just stomped down on one side of his face with his boot, and the other side went into the mat. And you could just kind of tell it was a little bit stiffer than what he had wanted to take. He seemed a little bit shook up by it. Not concussed or anything like that, but just, oh, wow, God, that hurt. But Kane won the first round. They came back in the ring, attacked him again. They managed to beat him down. They set up for the triple powerbomb, but Kane kicked Reigns. Looked like he was going to fight back, had both Rollins and Ambrose by the throat, being ready to do a double choke slam. But Reigns hit him with that spear again. Again, the camera crew set it up perfectly where it just looked frenetic and out of nowhere. And then Kane took the triple power bomb. They took his title belt, and they had already had the other title belt they had taken from Daniel Bryan earlier in the night. That both, they posed with him over the ring and left Kane lying there to end the show. I like that Kane was able to get some licks in here. I mean, it's a little bit silly if you want to compare it to the fact that Undertaker, you know, didn't even do as well as he did. The Undertaker was beat up worse in a lot of ways. But I don't think it's a fair comparison. I think, you know, Undertaker was going away. Kane is going to still be there. You have to make him look strong in this. And he did. And I liked the way they finished this off. I liked everything about this. And I like that they're concentrating on those tag titles. I hope they stay away from Cena and Ryback, because I think they hurt that program. They hurt themselves because you begin to question their motivations. But as long as they're doing what they're doing with Kane and Daniel Bryan, I like the Shield.
Yeah, agreed. I think the more they can separate them from Ryback and Cena, the better this program will end up being. And I enjoyed the post-match
beatdown. The Shield has been effective in just about every one of these things, and it was interesting to see how they set up Kane to get as much offense as he did. But I don't think he really took anything away from the Shield in the process. So I thought it was a successful conclusion to the show that managed to further the program, and it'll be interesting to see where they go on Monday. I hope they take a more serious tone with it. The comedy stylings of Kane and Bryan have long played themselves out.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what serious Kane and serious Daniel Bryan look like as they go through this feud. I wouldn't even mind them somehow keeping the tag titles for another month if they're going to be serious, because it ends up in some sort of mess. There's like really no finish, so they have to go back to it the following month. I'd even be okay with that if Daniel Bryan and Kane are serious and it becomes a real war between these two teams. I think it could be a lot of fun. But we're out of show. Jake, anything you want to add before we get out of here?
No, I think we covered everything, man. Everybody just have a good weekend.
And Jake and I will be back next week. The next time you guys will be able to hear me is later on today, Saturday, as this will be posted. I will be covering Ring of Honor's Board Awards. I believe it starts tonight at, let me look it up real fast. I think it's 7:30 Eastern time, so it'd be 6:30 Central. Is that right?
Yes, I think so.
It is. Yeah, 7:30 Eastern time, so 6:30 Central. I'll be covering that. And it's headlined by Jay Briscoe versus Adam Cole for the ROH World Championship. And I will be doing an audio review of that show afterwards as well. If you want to hear that, you've got to be a .NET member. So go sign up right now. Be a .NET member. You'll get to follow along with me on coverage on the ad-free version of the site. You can talk about it with others in the forum. You maybe even blog about the show afterwards. And, of course, you'll have access to that audio. Plus all the audio that we've done, all the audio that's coming up, including Jason Powell and I's audio review of the WWE pay-per-view Elimination Chamber, just 2 weeks away now. But just all that audio available for you becoming a .NET member, $7.50 a month since you started, or you can lock in for a cheaper term if you take the 6-month or 12-month option. Jake and I will be back next week, All Access. Until next time, folks, thank you so much for listening and for your support of the .NET site. Everyone have a great weekend, and take care.